excited to talk some video games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Here we go, off the rails. Don't you know it's time to raise our sails? It's freedom like you never knew.
Hello and welcome to the Vassals of Kingsgrave. Thank you for joining us this time around as we gather to discuss some of our favorite video games in the arbitrary time window of the calendar year of 2017. My name is Zach, also known as Alias on the Podcast Device and Fire forums, and joining me are...
G'day, this is Duncan, also known as Valkyrist on the forums.
This is Katie, Lady Griffin on the forums.
Hey, this is Bing, Shushan on the forums.
Awesome. Thank you all for coming along for the ride. So before we go ahead around and share some of our favorite games of the year, I'm just curious to hear some general thoughts from you guys just on the year of 2017 in gaming. A lot of people out there saying it's been one of the best that we've had in a few years. How did it stack up for you guys?
So, like, I don't dispute that claim.
Sure.
I just haven't played most of those games.
Yep.
First of all, I don't own a console, and it seems like all of these great games are all console games. Like Persona, like Zelda.
That's true. Yeah, it feels like a lot of the standouts for the year, especially the Nintendo games, which I think are stealing a lot of the headlines on that, are definitely obviously console only. So
it's just daunting.
Yeah.
I can't think of, like, of all the ones that have been touted as best of the year. And I just said this a minute ago, but they're all 100 plus hours. Breath of the Wild and Nier and Persona 5 is definitely a 100 plus hour game. It's just...
Mm-hmm.
I get, like, Night in the Woods was such a breath of fresh air because it's, like, I think, like, 15, 20 maybe? Not even that.
Right.
Doable in a weekend.
I have to admit, I haven't played a lot of games in the past couple of years. The game that I've picked is pretty much the only game I've completed from 2017, so I just haven't been gaming as much, unfortunately. But there does seem to be some good games. I tend to play the games a few years after they come out, so you know, games from 2012, I'll finally get around to playing all these like recommended titles. So I'll get around to a lot of these, just haven't had time lately.
No, same. I've been playing games from 2015 and 16 pretty much exclusively this past year or so.
Throw out some titles, what have you been playing?
Oh, Stardew Valley.
Oh,
come
yeah.
on.
Oh, that madness. Oh, the Stardew Valley. Yeah, I was in that. I think it was this year, actually. Yeah, I did the same thing. I fell into the Stardew Valley hole for quite some time.
Yeah.
Is Stardew Valley just better Farmville?
Well, Farmville is a Facebook game, right? I think Stardew Valley is more of a real game. What do you think, Bing?
Farmville is like an eighth of Stardew Valley. Stardew Valley is the you look at it, it doesn't look like it's much, but the deeper you dig, the more insane it gets.
Is it like Animal Crossing where you're building a community and digging up turnips?
It's much more than that. There's combat, there's mines, there's relationships. It's so many games folded into one.
If you were to boil it down, it is essentially, yeah, it's the Animal Crossing formula, the Harvest Moon formula, where you build up this farm and you build up relationships with the people in town. And you do various quests and things for them, and try to be a successful farmer. It sounds really boring in concept, but it's definitely just so fun and so relaxing once you really fall into it and get into it.
Right.
That sounds very stressful.
Yeah.
It's actually very stress-free. It's actually extremely stress-free, as long as you don't pursue maximum profit.
Right. There's obviously that fear, right, where if you don't do everything perfectly, that you're somehow going to be destitute and broke. But that the game is not that way. You don't have to optimize it, like you say, Bing. You don't have to you don't have to min-max Stardew Valley. Any other games standing out for you guys? Maybe not in 2017, but in general.
I've been playing BioShock Infinite, if that counts.
Oh
finally.
My god!
I can see why people liked it about five years ago.
Is this your first time?
Yeah. first time.
Yeah, I was actually thinking someone just in terms of like having this conversation about like years in video gaming. I think 2013 was like the last one for me where I was like, oh, this is actually really exciting. Like all the games coming out here. I think that was the last one for me where I was like that crazy about it.
I'm still not sure if Bioshock Infinite is good or not.
It's definitely got some troubling racial commentary that I don't think they thought very hard about, but yeah. I really enjoyed it when it came out, and I thought where that story went eventually was pretty damn good.
Well, the ending is bonkers.
Yeah, the ending is probably the best part.
You guys think we'll ever see another Bioshock?
No, not. I liked Infinite, but I thought that underwater Bioshock was deathly boring.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they're basically the same game in some ways. So I can't imagine, like, where would it be? On the land? Insane. Bioshock land instead of sky and sea. So, no, I don't want to see another Bioshock.
Bioshock Mars?
No.
Is there any hope for a new Half-Life game? Is there, like, any rumors about that?
There was just this thing that came out a few months ago from, I guess, a former writer at Valve or something like that, where he basically had this whole manifesto about what Half-Life 3 was supposed to be. And I haven't read it, but the vibe that people were saying that came off of that was that it's not going to happen. That was the impression.
You have an internet meme? That's as good as it's going to get, I think.
Oh, great. Yeah, anytime.
We need more of that.
It'll happen when the new Beyond Good and Evil game comes out.
Which is apparently a thing now. That was a 2017.
I don't believe it. I know they made that fancy trailer, but I think that's horseshit. I think they just, they don't have any money. That thing is never coming.
It's very possible, yeah. I think as we actually, something I do want to talk to you guys about is some of our most anticipated games in the next year and also probably going forward. And that's probably one of them, but it's one of those games that you think, this is not anywhere soon and probably not ever.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead here and jump into some of our games of this year. Games that we know do exist now, are playable.
That's verifiable.
Yeah, exist. So, Bing, you want to start off with your definitely full actual game from 2017?
Yeah, completely full actual game. XCOM 2, War of the Chosen, which is an expansion pack for a game from 2016. Just like I said, I've been playing games from 2016. But it is an extremely good expansion, and it expands the game much more than what it was originally. So there you go. It adds a lot more too. So the original XCOM 2 is already a great game, obviously, but this expansion really adds a lot more things. But I think the thing that I enjoy the most is that you can now make propaganda posters,
right, yeah,
for your soldiers.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this, and it's like the most surprisingly cool feature apparently that everyone says.
Yes.
Could you more about like what that's about?
Well, okay, so it's not just that, because they added a lot more depth to and customization to your own soldiers. So before that, they go and they fight, and maybe they die, oh well. But now they can form bonds between each other, and these bonds would give them special abilities during the campaign. But they can also, after every successful, well, actually every successful or unsuccessful battle, you can take propaganda posters, pictures, and then, yeah, they can do cool poses. And then once you snap those pictures, they'll show up in the actual map afterwards. Like you go into a map and you look at the poster on the actual map, and like a building or something like that, and it's there. It's actually there. It's great. Yeah,
I would love to have been in the room when they came up with that feature. Just like what the thinking.
It's brilliant.
It totally works from everything I've heard. You know, I think the idea of these games is that you know what really drives them is how you get attached to the characters that you have on your squad, right?
Yeah, basically, and they've added a lot more other things that helps flesh them out as well. Before that, so there's four classes. They go into two separate skill trees. Basically, you end up with kind of like the same soldiers multiplied by two or three.
Right.
But now they've added an extra facility where they can retrain. They can train other skills. So you can, let's say you went down one skill tree, but you want one specific skill from the other tree. Now you can go back and get it through a system of basically ability points. So that fleshes out these soldiers much more, and they make them actually stand out from each other, which makes them dying in battle even more painful.
Yeah.
And
do you have any particular experiences from your campaign you want to share?
So another major thing, of course, the actual major thing that's added is the three right. factions that's added on your side, and the three so-called chosen, these three boss enemies on the other side, which is excruciating. So there's one faction that I really like, the Reapers, because they're the ones that go around in undercover and shit. Yeah, well, I mean, stealth people. They can also set off bombs remotely, which is awesome. But so one of those fucking chosen assholes, they'll randomly show up on a map. They'll go around, they'll attack your soldiers, and if they stun your soldiers or they knock them out, they can go and kidnap your soldiers.
Okay.
So those fuckers kidnapped two of my soldiers in a row. Like, I got one Reaper. The original Reaper that the game gives you, that one of those fuckers came in and kidnapped her. I somehow managed to get another thing that gave me another Reaper. This fucker came in and kidnapped the other guy.
God. So for me, like, these are the games, you know, XCOM 1, XCOM 2, and obviously all the expansions are just like the games that I need to play. Like, they're at the very top of my list, but I just haven't pulled the trigger yet and played mm-hmm. them. You know, I love strategy games. They're by far my favorite genre of game. That's what really yeah. appeals to me personally. And these are obviously some of the best. And it has all those things that I like in a lot of other games, like right, like Fire Emblem, the same kind of thing, right, where you get attached to the characters, and if you lose them, you have to deal with the consequences of that. I love that, and this game seems like the perfect realization of that. I just haven't touched it for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, they just added. They added much more. So yeah, this expansion, they added much more depth to it. The original, the problem with the original XCOM 2 is that by the time you hit mid game, your soldiers almost become a bit invincible. Oh, okay. Like once you figure things, like what is the most optimal strategy, what is the most optimal build. This game now adds a lot more depth in the mid game that makes things more interesting. The end game is still probably gotten even worse in terms of your soldiers becoming too OP.
In a way, though, right? That's kind of the appeal to an extent, because you get to the point where you're so strong that you feel invincible. I definitely feel that way playing some games like that. Just like the general RPG feel, right? Of like reaching that power point where you can just annihilate everything. It's definitely a double-edged sword, but there is a certain appeal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the final thing that this expansion added was basically a kind of a third group of enemies, if you will, a third faction, if you will, on the map. Basically zombies things called the Lost. So these things, they're zombies. They'll attack you, but they can also attack your enemies. So that adds a lot more element to, well, do we want to actually kill all these zombies now, or we keep some of them and have them go after the aliens?
Right, you kind of have to manipulate your position on the map and try to get them to attack them and not you.
Yeah. Yeah, and trying to, I guess, play mind games with these, well, these thing, mindless things, and see, well, who are they going to attack, you or the aliens?
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great expansion, adds a lot of things, worth the price, which is rarity these days, I guess, with these DLCs, but almost a new game. It's almost that. It's hard to go back from World of the Chosen back to just the original XCOM 2.
Do you mess with any of the mods and stuff like that?
I haven't started. So there's the one big mod, is the Long Wars mod, that almost everybody plays when they play with the original XCOM. But I didn't really like the Long War 2 mod they had for XCOM 2, and I don't think they've done enough with that one that for XCOM War of the Chosen yet. The other, I mean, I have a ton of cosmetic and UI stuff, but not anything too significant yet. But they're out there. They're easy to play around with. So,
Katie, you're up.
Sure. Persona 5 was the only big game that I played, or long game that I played this year. Has anyone else played any Persona? No,
again, one of those games that Persona 4 first, that's the first one that kind of got on my radar. Obviously, there's games before that, but that was the first one where I was like, that sounds really cool, that mix of like social and you know, dungeon crawl combat kind of thing. Sounds awesome, but I just haven't touched either yet. I actually own Persona 5, but I've played like an hour, so that's the most embarrassing part.
Like Zach said, it's a JRPG dungeon crawler slash like visual novel in a way, but also like a dating sim slash social management game. So half of it is fighting monsters with your demon Pokemon, and the other half is doing your homework and dating girls. And it somehow meshes together really well. It's over 100 hours, so I won't spoil anything that isn't in the first hour, but the basic premise is that you're a high schooler, you're walking home late one night, you see a woman who is being assaulted, you push her assaulter off, he falls to the ground, and you find out he's a politician, and he ruins your life. And you get expelled from your school, you have a criminal record, and you are sent to live with a foster caretaker in Tokyo so that you can attend a different high school. And being Japan, getting expelled from school, you might as well be a murderer. Everyone is terrified of you. You're a delinquent. And like every other Persona game, you eventually stumble upon this world of the subconscious where people's desires and feelings are manifested as monsters, and the game becomes this. It's like in the past Persona games, like the dungeons are treated with a different theme. And in this game, it's very much like gentleman thief, 1970s heist movies. And so you and your high school friends become the phantom thieves, and you break into these palaces in this subconscious demon world, and you steal people's hearts, and it's kind of fun and silly, and it's really hard to explain. I was trying to like write out a summary. I was like, this is really tough to explain if you've never played Persona. It's bonkers and crazy and very, very Japanese, but I totally dug it, and I pulled it off in a little over 100 hours, but you could definitely go way longer. And it's a bit like Night in the Woods in that you do not have enough time or slots given to do everything that you want to do and see all the people you want to see. So I think like the way that the social side of the game is managed, you have what's called social links. And so I think there's like 20 of them in the game. So 20 characters who you can get up to level 10 with and see their stories and advance your relationship with them. And on my first run, I think I finished 7 of them. Because the game is folded into a day and night cycle. So it's like you have 2 slots in every day. You have a day, like daytime and then nighttime. And so in the daytime, you can go and talk to people and also manage your personal stats. And in the nighttime, you also can go and see people and do the same thing. So by the end of the calendar year, there's not enough time to do everything. So it becomes a little stressful because your friends are constantly calling your phone and being like, hey, come hang out with me. And you can only pick one. And I felt like that stresses me out a lot in the real world. But yeah, it's definitely one of those games that you have to play again, New Game Plus, to see all the content for.
100 hours at it to experience everything.
Yeah, I tried to do like a second run. I was like, I don't think I can do this as much as I want to. I think I'll just go to YouTube to see all the social links.
It's actually kind of the same thing. Just talking about the whole calendar system and having to kind of choose what you want to do is actually pretty similar to Stardew Valley in that way, you have to make choices on a given day, and there's only so many days that you have to work with. And I actually, you know, there's 2 ways to play that, right? There's the one where you stress out and you feel like you have to, again, like kind of optimize it, hit like every like exact thing you want to do on the day. I think, right, I've heard this secondhand, but in Persona 5, there's like one day where you can like go study or like go get like milkshakes or something, and that like increases your stats, that kind of thing. There's a way to play that where you just try to optimize, or you just kind of go with the flow and let things happen and just appreciate the story you have.
Yeah, the personal stats thing is the killer in the first playthrough, just because like the thing you want to do is you want to go see the social links, you want to go hang out with the characters and get to know them and see their stories, but you also need to get your personal stats up. And the only way to do that is by doing these mundane tasks like getting a day job and doing your homework and going to the batting cages. And that eats up so much time that it sucks the possibility of getting done what you want to get done. And fortunately, like the second playthrough, all of those stats are kept from your first playthrough. So you're maxed out on courage and stamina and charm. And so, yeah, second playthrough, you definitely have more dialogue options and actions that you can take that were cut off and unavailable in the first playthrough. So, yeah, new game plus. It's a lifesaver.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those games where I just stylistically, it's awesome to me. Just the music, the look of it, the art, everything, and it feels like it would be such a fun game to play. I'm definitely a sucker for kind of the social management aspect in any given game, but it's just a little too much for me. It's definitely that level of daunting intimidation that comes with the time required to invest, and also just the amount of things you have to learn, the amount of systems that seem to be in the game.
Mm. You know you're in trouble when the tutorial is 10 hours long.
I think the only thing stopping me from playing this game is I don't own PlayStations. Because I'm total weeb. This is basically kind of the types of game that's made for me, but I don't own PlayStations. That's the only reason I'm not playing this. Please port it to PC.
Fat chance.
Yeah. Also, I mean, it's definitely one of the most visually gorgeous games I've seen in a long time. They went with the cel-shaded approach to some of the menus, and it's just, it's very slick, it's very smooth, it's very, it's just cool. And the like the visual motif of like 70s gentleman thieves and like robbers, it's just cat burglars, it's just everything that I love is on the screen. It's really good. And if you haven't played Persona 4, also pick it up. Persona 3 is my favorite, but it's tough to go back to.
But that's Persona, the one where you shoot yourself.
Yeah, that's the one where you the way they summon their persona is by shooting themselves in the head with a gun. Can't understand why they took that out of the later games. Yeah, totally weird. But Persona 4 still holds up, even though it, you know, doesn't look too great anymore.
How would you rank them of those things?
Like, my personal like of them, or like what I think is the best?
Your personal. I don't care about what's best.
Oh, yeah. 3 is my favorite. Then 5, then 4, even though I think 4 is probably the best game of all of them. And I haven't played the first two, so I can't comment on those.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting parsing that from people that are Persona fans in terms of which they think is best. It sounds to me like, you know, for some people, Persona 5 took it to the next level, but others feel like it lost some stuff from previous games.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot. They're so different from each other, right, tonally and story-wise, that it's really hard to compare them. It's just really in the mechanics and in the format that they're identical in that way, but it's like they're night and day compared to the stories they're trying to tell. And I really like, as much as I love 5, I also felt a little let down by it in the story, but I don't know. I still thought it was really good. 3 is just everything like right up my alley in that it's dark and apocalyptic, oh, yeah, and everyone is miserable. So 4 is much happier and 5 is much happier. So
can't have any of that. Yeah, it's for sure just another game I have to play. All right. Speaking though of another console game that probably only a few of us have played, Duncan, do you want to go ahead here?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to be talking about Breath of the Wild. So this is the long-awaited newest entry in the Legend of Zelda series. It follows a familiar narrative with our mute hero Link waking up from a long slumber to find the Kingdom of Hyrule in chaos and the Princess Zelda held hostage in her own castle. However, it reforms many of the gameplay conventions of the series, offering players a colossal open-world environment which places far less emphasis on defined entrances and exits to areas. The game is notably more difficult than previous entries owing to the fact that weapons and shields are all breakable, and health can only be replenished by cooking ingredients rather than collecting hearts. This requires constant improvisation and scavenging on the part of the player, all while being confronted by enemies who can often kill you in only one or two hits. In the early stages of the game, I actually found myself avoiding even the most basic enemies or trying to figure out more creative ways of killing them, like rolling a boulder onto their camp or setting their tents on fire or things like that. The game has been compared to the first Legend of Zelda for the NES in that the player is placed in the world without much instruction, and they're allowed to sort of explore freely at their own pace. There is, as always, there is an overriding level structure in the form of four mechanical giants located at the far corners of the map, which Link has to wrestle back from Ganon's control. However, unlike previous games, these dungeons can be tackled in any order you please. The fact that you acquire all the main items during the tutorial gives you the confidence that you can complete any task or access any area. And in fact, you can even go directly to Hyrule Castle to face Ganon within the first 30 minutes of the game. However, you quickly learn, as I did, that you are woefully underprepared, and you get roasted by the welcoming party at the castle. The game offers a sort of deconstructed take on the traditional Zelda level design. Rather than having six or seven massive dungeons, you have four small dungeons and then just dozens upon dozens of shrines, which are these sort of 5 to 10 minute puzzles scattered all over the map. And shrines are completely optional, but they contribute to your health and stamina, so they're vital for getting better at surviving the wild. So Breath of the Wild, it shifts the series away from narrative and sequenced objectives towards just pure exploration and experimentation. The world you find yourself in is really beautiful and diverse and dangerous, and it feels truly endless. You know, you can trek in one direction for hours and never reach an invisible wall. Also, unlike previous Zelda games or adventure games in general, you never really feel a sense of mastery over the environment. And we mentioned this before with RPGs, how you can just become invincible after leveling up so much. But you never really feel that with this game, or at least I didn't, the amount that I played. You know, you might find the best weapon ever, but sooner or later it's going to break, which will leave you, you know, potentially at the mercy of a horde of bloodthirsty lizards with nothing but a stick. And you are completely at the mercy of the elements, so it may start raining, which makes climbing impossible and forces you to go take another route if you need to go around an incline. A storm may start, which forces you to put away all of your metallic gear in case you get struck by lightning. And there are sections of the world that are so hot or cold that Link will just start hemorrhaging hearts as he walks through them. I mean, you can get armor to protect yourself against that, but I beat the whole game and I never got enough rupees to actually get the armor to do that. So I ended up just constantly using potions and running between these areas to survive. And yeah, even 40 hours into the game, there are still enemies out there who can roast you alive with a single shot. So you still have to tread carefully. However, the game sustains a consistent sense of wonder and mystery, ensuring that you're always willing to venture a little further and to find out what's on the other side of that mountain or what's hidden in the cave before returning to your main quest. So yeah, that's my favorite game this year that I played. Have any of you guys played it?
No.
Nah.
I did play this one, actually. And I loved it. I have a just generally like a weird relationship with Zelda games in general. They're not for me the same as many people, my favorite games ever, but I do really love and appreciate, particularly Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker. I have played both of those and little bits of all the other Zelda games, and also watched hundreds of hours of speedruns of Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker too. So that's my main access point for those.
Yeah.
But this game was so much better than I thought it would be. I you know, played it not expecting a lot, because again, the first thing being, I open world games for the most part don't do it for me. There are some exceptions to that, but just the whole mechanic of that, the whole idea of a big, broad but ultimately empty space is not appealing to me as you go around, you know, as this game does do, albeit a lot better, you know, opening up towers typically. That's the kind of Ubisoft model to unlock new locations and collect things throughout the map.
Right.
But this game just, in so many ways, you know, made that model so much more interesting. Just one little mechanic that completely, for me, redefines the exploration is the paraglider, right? Just this little way of traversal that you get at the beginning of the game completely upends the options that you have to move around. And it's not OP, it's not like Batman in those games where you can fly anywhere. You have to really think about getting up to a high location and then floating down to the next place. But just that one little thing completely just made it so much fun to traverse the map to find new things. It did have that genuine sense of exploration and that the just fun of finding new things and not knowing what would be around the next corner over that mountain that you want to scale. It was so much fun for so many reasons.
Yeah, you really have to plot your path in a way. So you might see somewhere you want to explore, but you've got to figure out how to get there. So you might try and climb, rather than walking there directly, you might try to climb to a high peak and then glide down to another part and then work your way through. So like compared to a game like Skyrim, which I didn't play heaps, but it felt like you could sort of just get around everywhere pretty much at the same speed, even if you're going up a hill or down a hill. Whereas here, it's more, I don't know, you have to chart your course a bit more, and you're sort of just encouraged to explore. So you might just see something weird. You might see something glowing, or you might see a dragon just kind of winding its way through the air, and you're like, what's over there? Like, because it's so formless, because you aren't necessarily given specific objectives beyond, you know, the vague, you know, objectives, go to these four dungeons. But there's so much in between that you can explore. You kind of, it is really a kind of visual storytelling. So you look at the land and it kind of tells you things intuitively, and your eye is kind of drawn to certain areas. Just the shape of the land kind of curtails you or shifts you or cajoles you in particular directions. It moves you around. It presents things to you. And it's just, it's such a beautiful game. It's probably the most beautiful game Nintendo's made so far, because you can see so far into the distance beyond being really detailed and colorful. Up close, it has such a broad depth, you can see so far into the distance is what I mean. So you can climb all the way up a mountain and then look back and see how far you've come, or you can just kind of just stop and admire the scenery or take a photograph. It's so visually stunning that in itself is the reward. You just want to see more of it, like beyond any collectibles or objectives. You just want to see what's out there. And there is so much out there. Like, I beat the game in like 40, 50 hours, just the main quest. And I would stop and do things that were interesting along the way, or complete shrines to upgrade. But by the end of the game, I found there was, you know, huge sections of the map that were still uncharted. Or there'd be sections of the map that I just kind of quickly went through on the way to somewhere else that just were completely unexplored. And I think there's like 120 shrines. I beat about 40 of them. So there's just like, the actual main quest is really only like 25% of the game, which is a huge switch from, say, the regular Zelda games. Like Ocarina of Time, the main game is like 75% of the game, and then there's plenty of hearts you can collect. But here, it's just, it's so much of it is just open for exploration.
I have three questions, because this is a game that it appeals to me, but I don't know if I'll ever, like, I haven't owned a Nintendo console in years, but other than the main story, like, it does look gorgeous, but like, as you're traversing the environment, are you meeting people? Or are you discovering little narratives that are interesting? Because that's always my complaint, is like, it's one thing to have like a big gorgeous world, but it's even better if, you know, there're little stories wrapped up in there. And like, do you feel that when you're exploring the wilderness in this game?
No, not really. And I guess I would say that is a criticism of the game. I think other Zelda games like Majora's Mask, you get a lot more sort of mini side characters that are quite interesting to engage with. Here, it's mostly you meet people along the way, and there's little fetch quests and side quests, but I wasn't as emotionally involved as I was in other Zelda games. I think the story is probably the weakest aspect of it, even the main story. And that one of the big changes, one of the big reforms was voice acting, which they introduced, which I really didn't like. I thought the English voice acting was kind of weak. I actually changed it to Japanese just because it was more interesting just to hear it in another language and read it. Like, it's fine when you read the story, but the actual, particularly Zelda, I found
Zelda's
really annoying.
Voice acting is not the best. Just to answer that question about like finding random side stuff, and just to ask you, Duncan, did you do, I'm just going to call it the Tarrytown questline?
I don't think so.
I'm not going to go into too much detail for spoiler reasons, but that for me is actually an example, and there are others, but for me, this is probably the coolest and most interesting side quest, and I'll just say that it is an example of that kind of thing where you feel like you're meeting, you know, interesting side characters, and more importantly for me, leaving a mark behind. You know, I think that's something that is tricky with an open world game, to feel like you're having an impact, and this one quest line is just so fun. So many fun, quirky characters. And, you know, it's an example of, you know, Duncan's point. He enjoyed this so much. He saw so many things, but he hasn't seen this at all. And it's a fantastic piece of the game.
Yeah.
And there's so many other things like that to find and do.
Yeah. Or to be clear, I only really played the main quest. Like, I've sort of put it aside and I'm playing another game now, but I could go back there and spend hundreds of hours. There is so much to do. So for all I know, there may be lots of little interesting storylines outside the main quest.
So, second question, how does it perform? Because I've heard mixed things about this. Like, do you ever feel like it's chugging? Like, if you're like in the towns or something, like, does it run well on the Switch?
Yeah, I heard that too. I didn't really notice a problem. There was a few times, like when you go into a forest area, it did really start to, the frame rate started to drop. But mostly I found it pretty smooth, especially considering the size of it. Like unlike other adventure games or Zelda games where you're sort of moving between areas. So you'll enter one area, then you'll exit it. It'll load the next area. Here it is this really continuous experience through these vast, vast spaces. More so than any game, more so than like Skyrim or Fallout. I felt like it felt really smooth and continuous. There probably was some dropping, but it really didn't affect my experience. But maybe I'm not noticing those things as much as some other people. But I have heard that as the criticism, so it probably is valid.
And I guess my first question goes back to something you said at the beginning, is do you feel like the main appeal of the game is that you have to strategize minute to minute? Like it rewards you for cleverness and then punishes you so you feel like you're constantly learning?
I think so, yeah. And that was one of the things that really frustrated me at the start of the game. Like this game actually took me a while to beat because I got it, I played it for a week, and then I sort of got a bit frustrated and lost interest. So I got to the end of like the first dungeon, or which the dungeon that I picked first, and I got to the boss and he just kept slaughtering me. I beat him, like, I faced him like 10 times and he just kept killing me with a single shot, and I was like, what am I doing wrong? And what I realized was I'd sort of rushed too quickly through the main quests and I wasn't strong enough to actually face him. So I actually left the dungeon, which is actually something I've never done in a Zelda game, where you enter a dungeon and then leave it again. And I just went out exploring and just tried to get better at the system. So I hadn't figured out that because weapons break, you have to be more careful with the weapons. So I went out exploring. I beat some guys up. I took their weapons. I found some better weapons. I collected arrows. And by the end of it, like, I'd gotten proficient enough at the reflex fighting, where you have to, you know, you can press a button or dodge, and that gives you a bit of an opening to attack someone. So you learn a bit more about the management system, a bit more about the sort of some of the nuances of the combat. And that was enough to just go back and then defeat the boss. He was still tricky, but I beat him after that. So it does, it rewards that kind of, it's not just about this sort of linear leveling up and making yourself stronger. It is this kind of constant management, this constant, not just of your inventory, but management of situations. Like a situation can kind of get out of control if you sort of jump into the middle of a camp of bad guys and they gang up on you. So you kind of have to approach them, you know, pick off their scouts and drop bombs on them and scatter them. And, you know, if you can find an explosive, hit that. So I think there's a bit more strategy involved that I really appreciated. It wasn't about the big villains. It was more about just day-to-day survival in the wild, if that makes sense, which I really enjoyed. There wasn't a sense of having a safe place to go back to, like a town you could return to. There are a couple of towns and there's a couple of sort of settlements, but it's mostly just a world that's kind of like fallen apart and you're walking through the ruins of castle and it's been kind of reclaimed by nature. So it really does feel like a wild kind of place. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it's like you dropped out for a couple of seconds. So if it shows up on the recording, me going, no, that's because I thought the call had stalled.
I got it all.
Yeah, I love games that take place in broken or fallen worlds. I mean, Shadow of the Colossus is one of my favorite games for that reason, and just trying to piece together in your mind and making up stories of what might have happened. And it's one of the reasons I want to play this game, so someday I'll get around to it.
I just thought it's also got a nice mix of fantasy and science fiction, because it's all kind of castles and medieval and monsters and dragons and all that. But you've also got these metallic creatures called the Guardians, who once protected, and Zelda's kind of presented as like a scientist figure, like she's always doing experiments and she helped create these machines to protect the kingdoms. But the machines went haywire, or like, I don't know, Ganon hacked them or something and turned them against the Hylians. So there's a lot of like sort of steampunky imagery when you're entering these dungeons. And also a lot of the items, the sort of key items that you use throughout the game, which you get at the beginning of the game, have a kind of scientific basis, or like a physics thing. So you'll use like a magnet to pick things up and move them around, or you'll use this stasis item to sort of free something in time, and you can, you know, affect it, and whatever effects you put against it will like ignite once it unfreezes and things like that. So there's some nice physics stuff that's happening in the game.
There's so many different ways that you can approach a lot of the problems. You know, the shrines are all these little puzzles you have to solve, and there's all kinds of ways you can do it with those abilities you have. The stasis you mentioned, you can freeze water to create blocks of ice that you can jump on and things like that. And it's crazy the stuff people come up with, like attaching these little Korok balloons to rafts to like fly up in the air with a piece of driftwood and go various places and fun stuff like that. I didn't do a ton of that, but there was just still so many fun little things that I discovered. Like one of my personal anecdotes of just like going off the beaten path and doing something that you wouldn't expect was just very early on sneaking into, you know, I'll just say, I don't think it's a huge spoiler, there's a Hyrule Castle in this game, as there tends to be in Zelda games, and you sneak in there, and it felt so dangerous early in the game, sneaking in there from, like, a side entrance that you had to you know, like, cross the river and go past all the scary monsters to get into, and just stealth your way through all these high-level enemies and to get new weapons, because as Duncan said, that, you know, the weapons break and some are stronger than others. And if you can find a bunch of really strong ones, it definitely sets you up for success. What did you think of the weapon breaking mechanic?
Yeah, well, as I said, I found it really frustrating at the beginning because I didn't realize it was happening. So I suddenly found myself with like really weak weapons and no arrows, and I couldn't continue. But I think it works. Like, I think it continually keeps you on your toes, and you can, like, you can have enough weapons that it's okay. Like, you can still hold up to like 6-7 weapons, and you can make room for other inventory. So you can collect enough weapons that if one breaks, you can move on to the next one. And I think it forces you to be diverse. So you might lose your sword and shield, so you have to use a spear, or you have to use like a boomerang, or you have to use a projectile weapon. So it forces you to try out and become proficient in all the different types of weapon and all the different fighting styles, which I liked. So you'd, rather than just picking a favorite weapon and just using that throughout the whole game, you're forced to learn.
There's a tendency in an RPG to find that perfect weapon and just stick with it for the whole game. And there's so many different weapon types and things that you miss out on. And at first I was kind of down on that system because that's what I'm used to, right, is having that one weapon that I know I can rely on. But it ultimately became so fun to experience all these different weapon types and different ways of approaching combat. I think it was actually a really smart choice. And I can't say enough good things about just that basic mechanic at the beginning that you mentioned, Duncan, the idea that the first quest you get after some tutorial stuff is literally kill Ganon. That's the first quest you get, and it's like, that's the objective you have, yeah. And you have to figure out how to do it. And if you wanted to, you could go run up to the Ganon and try to fight him, as you said. But I can't say enough good things about that from a open world standpoint. In terms of you get that one quest, and then you have to figure out how the hell am I going to do this? What am I going to do when I go out in the world? What is my approach here? It's so smart. I love it.
It sort of strips Zelda down to its essential core. Like, just there's story there, but you can go find out what the story is if you want. But ultimately, you just have to go kill this guy.
You have to find your own path to do that. There's not you know, a prescribed way.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like completely up to you how you do it.
Another just little thing that I love, just talking about sort of the visual storytelling stuff that you mentioned. Just the idea that all the things that you want to go find are orange on the map, and all the things that you've already found are blue. Just a little small design idea that I think just communicates so much. And, you know, it's the same kind of thing like talking about The Last of Us. All the locations that you want to go toward, there's like this little bit of subtle yellow. It's the same just like small like gameplay thing where it guides you in a direction.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, I guess a lot of it's just subconscious. Just the colors you kind of attract you to certain areas. One, there were a few criticisms, well, vague criticisms. I sort of talked about the frustrating difficulty curve at the beginning. The music I felt wasn't a sort of, that's one of my favorite things about the Zelda games, has some of my favorite music in video games. None of the music really stood out to me. Most of it was just kind of atmospheric, so it complements the exploration really well. You have these subtle little sort of piano keys playing, or when you're up on a mountain or running through a field, you'll have this kind of sweeping music. But it didn't have that kind of iconic theme music that I really love in a lot of Zelda games. Like, I can't remember any of the music.
Yeah, it just wasn't that memorable.
That kind of says it all. So I was kind of disappointed in that. But it does, yeah, it creates a nice atmosphere. You can get a bit bored climbing up those towers, and there is a lot of downtime sometimes where you're just kind of, it does feel, to Katie's point, at times it does feel like a bit of an empty world you're just kind of making your way to a point. And it can take a while. Like, you want to get to the point, but it can't. There are points where you're getting a bit tired. And,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It just, everything just takes so long because it's so big that you find your, you know, you'll be playing and you'll look at the clock and like 4 hours have passed and you feel like you haven't actually, even though you've had fun, you haven't actually accomplished
it's all
that much.
Pretty easy to fall in that trap, the open world trap of just going around unlocking things, you know, just doing it for its own sake. But I found a lot of ways just to create my own fun. Just one thing, I loved the cooking in this game. It's the best cooking I've had in any game. Just, it's very simple. It's, you know, you put together different ingredients you find or you buy from stores and you just can customize them to make a bunch of like different dishes. It was just so fun and gratifying to me. And it actually, you know, the food in the game is a huge, huge thing. It's kind of like a Witcher where like the food is your main source of healing. So it's very important and rewarding to create like really good food, especially stuff that brings your stamina back, because you can use that to climb even higher. If your stamina is about to run out, you can eat something and refresh it and keep going. So it's rewarding and also just really fun.
Right. Yeah. It's an interesting sort of RPG mechanic where you can make things to up your strength or up your defense or heat resistance or cold resistance or up your health for various segments of time. So if you have a big fight coming up, you can max yourself out and plunge into it, and by the end, you know, you might have half a heart left. I did find that a little frustrating as well, just because you're it does break the flow a little bit, because if you're in a big battle, you're constantly pausing and eating stuff.
The UI of that,
you know, to get your health back up.
Just having to pause, hit the...
Yeah.
There have definitely been some fun videos that have come out of people playing this game. There's one that I was watching the other day. It was like a guy carried a cuckoo for 5 hours through the wilderness to take it to a volcano and chuck it in. And this other dude, he found this ball out in the middle of nowhere, and he's like, I think I've seen a pedestal where this goes.
Yes, I saw that.
Oh my god. He carried it for like 2 days, and then he got there and it didn't do anything. It was pretty good.
No, like, I think he knew that wasn't the right thing, but it was like, it was meant for another puzzle, but he saw that same hole for a separate puzzle, and he thought, could I use a ball from one puzzle to complete another puzzle? And he was just pushing it, because it, you know, it can't fall off a cliff or into a water or the ball disappears, so he has to plot a path through the landscape, like, to get the ball from, you know, one side of the map to the other, which is really hard, rolling it up hills. Things like that. And I think in game time it probably took like 6 months, and he finally got it to the hole and nothing happened. and I think one of the comments was like, you know, Zelda's in her tower watching Link just do this for like 6 months, thinking, why the hell did I chew this guy as my champion?
There's just so many weird things you can do with that kind of thing, where you just encounter some weird puzzle and try to figure it out. The ultimate end of that being these Korok seeds that you can get, which is not something I messed with much, but there's like 900 of these things that you can find in the map, which is obscene. But if you want to,
oh my
you can find
God,
all of them.
Yeah. That is the ultimate, yeah, like, completist nightmare. 900 of these seeds, which are invisible. Like, you have to, you'll see, like, a glisten in the grass, and go up and press A, and you'll find one. Like, the idea of finding all of them is absurd. The first time I found a cuckoo, I attacked it just to see what would happen, and
something
I was not
happened.
Disappointed. That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently, if you get, you can trick like an enemy to attack a cuckoo, and then they get sort of just destroyed. So you throw a cuckoo into an enemy encampment, and the cuckoos attack the enemies. yeah, there's lots of funny things like that. Shield surfing. If you get up on top of a mountain, you can jump on your shield and just kind of surf the landscape.
Reading about the development for this game is actually really fascinating, just because they tried a new schedule for it, and that usually testing is done, or like in-house testing is done late in development, or at least towards the end of the development cycle. And instead, they started like giving copies out to the employees relatively early, like in mini stages of testing. And so people would go home and play it and then come back with ideas, and it actually helped them be more creative with the process. It was actually really interesting to read about.
Any other questions?
I think we're pretty comprehensive on Zelda. Yeah, I think it's really good. It's a really good game. It's probably... it's definitely in my top three. I have a couple other games that, which I'll get to in a minute, one of them that are above it, but it was a lot better than I thought, and there was just so many little fun experiences I had. And I think that if you have a chance, obviously it's on the Switch, also on the Wii U if you happen to have that, it's 100% worth a play. I'll just go ahead here and do my game. All right, my game is Divinity Original Sin 2. So this is the best RPG I feel like I've played in years, which is, you know, kind of a bold claim, I guess, because I obviously play a lot. It's definitely, it's my top two in terms of genres of games. And it's also one of those rare games that I just couldn't wait to get home and keep playing when I got home. You know, I haven't really felt that kind of just like primal excitement, like just, you know, that idea where like when you're not playing the game, you're thinking about it, since I've played Dark Souls, actually, which we talked about in the last roundtable. So Divinity Original Sin 2, RPG, fantasy RPG, it's pretty typical in that way where it's, you know, the story is not anything special. It kind of counterintuitive to why this would be my favorite RPG. The story is not the main selling point of this game, I don't think. It has a you know, a pretty typical kind of fantasy story. You start out as a person called a sorcerer, and you have these strange magic powers that the local religion has a problem with, so you're imprisoned, and you have to deal with that, escape from this kind of prison where they're all rounding up all these magical people. But yeah, that's really not what this game is about for me. What this game is about is this idea that, you know, a lot of games like to talk a big game about choice, about branching paths, about options, about the different possibilities that you can have as you play through them. And I think that this, for me, is the best example that I can think of that's actually done that and taken it to the next level, where it touches every single aspect of the game, from the combat to the social interactions you have with characters. There are, you know, so many different routes in the way that you can do things. So this is a traditional kind of turn-based RPG-style combat. Once you walk up to a fight, everything pauses, and it's, you know, one turn after the other that you have to do. And every single encounter I had felt like a new challenge, felt like a new opportunity to learn more about the mechanics of this game, the different spells I had available to me, the different options I had with the different characters in terms of where to place them, how to spend the action points I have on a given turn. It was so much fun. I don't have, again, enough good things to say about this one. I did play it, just to note, co-op. That's another thing that you can do on this game, which is, I think, a rare thing, right, in this kind of RPG where it is more story-driven, where it's more progression-driven with this like massive spanning world, as opposed to the typical co-op RPGs where they're kind of things like Diablo or Path of Exile, where it's more about going into dungeons and clearing them out and getting loot. That really wasn't the driving force of this one.
Do you have to play co-op?
You don't have to play co-op. So the way it works is that you play the game in a party of four characters. So you can, if you want to, play solo and recruit three of the different companions you have. I think there's six total companions in the game that you can have. Or if you want to, you can have three of your friends play with you and be a full party of four online players playing together through the game. And which is, I haven't done it like that. I the way I played it was two players, two characters, which I think was actually the ideal mix for me, because the main story, while isn't great, it's competent, but it's not great. But a lot of the actual good storytelling in the game is learning about these different companions you can have and kind of uncovering who they are and what their goals are. So having that kind of mix of two players, each with kind of their own companion that they could take ownership of and kind of customize and have as their person, was felt like the good mix. But yeah, you can play it with four players, which sounds crazy and chaotic and probably a lot of fun too, because everyone can go off on their own way if they want to and just do whatever they want on the map and get in their own trouble, or, you know, talk to the NPCs on their own and discover things and progress things. And it's just I, you know, there's an anecdote on this first prison island that I've seen, where if you are playing as different races as your characters, you can approach this location and have completely different experiences. You know, you might be the smooth talking human who bribes his way past a guard, or you might be thrown in jail as a dwarf, because there's obviously some racism in this game, as fantasy RPGs tend to have, and you have to find your way out of that. There's just so many different approaches you can take. If you want to, you can get into combat with the whole city. It's probably not going to end well for you, because this game is actually pretty tough if you play it on the normal or the high difficulty, which I actually haven't even messed with that high difficulty. So that's probably not a good idea. But you can if you want to. You could kill every NPC. You could take all their stuff. You could have full chaos. Or otherwise, you can find your way to finesse your way through, figure out the social interaction, try to solve a puzzle, and there's all kinds of different approaches you can take, and it really feels fully realized in that way. It doesn't feel like it's a fancy dress up for that idea, which a lot of games I feel like do feel that way.
It's a lot of looks almost like a mix of WoW and Dragon Age.
I try to think of the best comparison for this. It's in that CRPG camp, right, where different games mm-hmm. coming out now that are kind of harking back to the old RPGs like Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights and all that stuff.
Right.
It's in that camp with like things like Pillars of Eternity and Wasteland 2 and those kind of new games that are taking the same thing, but it's on its own, I think, in that co-op aspect. Right, I think that's the main difference, but it doesn't feel like an MMO. I guess it doesn't feel like that same kind of massive scale where we're dealing with a lot of people. It feels very focused. It feels very driven by your party and what you do.
Cool. You can play me undead.
So that's one of the things, right? So a character option you have is to play as an undead character, which is dangerous because everyone in the game hates undead. Like, if you encounter any NPC character, they will flip out if they see that you're undead. They'll probably try to kill you. So what undead characters have to do is wear a hood and disguise themselves at risk of pissing off everyone. Or if you want to, you can just take the helmet off and just run around and piss off everyone. And that's the approach you take. That's what's so cool about it, is that you truly feel like you have a lot of options. And there's basically no signposting, too. It's the same kind of thing with Zelda, right? You really have to figure things out largely on your own. You have to figure out what the right path is, and you're probably gonna screw up a lot. There were definitely a few, to use like the Dungeons and Dragons parlance, moments where me playing with my friend, we kind of went into murder hobo territory, where we just like accidentally got into fights with people and accidentally killed important NPCs, pissed them off, and had to deal with the consequences of that. So there was definitely some save scumming to kind of back off on that, but if you wanted to, you could just live with the choices you made, and it's gonna give you a very different experience than what other people have. The combat in particular is just so fun to strategize with. It's just, there's so many possibilities to customize within any given encounter. There's all kinds of different spells, and they're the kind of things that have an impact on the environment. So like, if you wanted to, you can throw oil on the ground and create an explosive chain reaction, or you can teleport yourself to high ground to reach the mage that they're hiding behind their warriors, or you can teleport the enemies into the fire, or teleport them away from your own mage so they can't get up close and personal with them. It's just every turn it feels like you have to it's the XCOM thing that way too, right, where it's like every turn you feel like it's not nearly as deep as that, but but you do feel like every turn you have to take as its own and think about what you're gonna do.
Okay.
I the co-op element definitely elevates it. There's a lot of reasons why it probably wouldn't be that fun on your own. I think it would be a good experience, but the co-op is what really sets it apart. Like, if I could play an RPG of this caliber with someone else consistently, I would be happy. Like, that's all I would need out of video games, is just having that high level of RPG experience with someone else. It's so cool. I hope it becomes more of a trend.
Just reading online about it, it said some people criticize the inconsistent difficulty. How did you find it? Like, was it too difficult at times and too easy at others?
I think it's the same thing with Zelda, where you can chart whatever path you want, and you can accidentally run into an encounter you're not ready for. Just straight up, you can encounter something that's several levels above you.
Right.
Your current party, and you can't deal with that, and it's pretty hard. Even stuff that's on your current level, if you approach it the wrong way and the particular encounter is particularly punishing, you're gonna have trouble. It's tough, and it's not a simple thing where you can just like save and reload. You could potentially lose some party members, and you have to go buy an expensive resurrection scroll to get them back alive, which is a pain. But yeah, it's definitely the kind of thing where you have to tread carefully, be aware of the environment, and not just run around recklessly and hope that it's just going to work out for you.
I was just wondering how you found the story. Is there much there, or is it just sort of the basics of the world, and then you just make your way through it?
I'm not gonna go so far as to say that, again, like, I don't think the story is the selling point, but I don't think it's bad by any means. I think it's competent. I'll say that's the best way for me to describe it. The fun stories are kind of the weird scenarios you get into. So just to give one kind of ancillary anecdote, not really a spoiler, one of the favorite moments that I had playing this game was just this moment where we walked into, again, like typical RPG thing that you do, walk into somebody's room that they rented in just to see what's going on in there. And it's this wealthy merchant with a couple of bodyguards. And one of the bodyguards is just talking to them, mentions that the room feels like it's kind of cold, right? So one of the mechanics in the game is that you can activate this spirit vision so that you can see ghosts in various places and talk to dead people, essentially. So we do this, and we find out that in this room, again, minor spoiler, but it is a spoiler. We find out in this room that the actual wealthy merchant is dead, and his ghost is there, and this man has gone and replaced him and has taken over his business. And just figuring that out and just having the opportunity, something that we probably would have completely missed if we hadn't had that ambient dialogue where the guard was talking about how cold it was, completely creates this interesting new encounter that we have to deal with. Of course, we murder this guy, take his stuff. That's our approach to handling that, but yeah, it's so
yep. for this murder hobo. Yeah.
Just so many conversations that we would have where how do we approach this? What's the best way to go here? Where should we go? How do we escape this place? It's just there's so many fun moments you have, and that's really where the story is, I think. And again, like the actual story is pretty good. It's not a detractor, I would say. And the companion characters are a lot of fun to learn about.
Is there any, speaking of murdering NPCs, is there any kind of morality system? Does it punish you for doing certain things, or is it just do whatever you want and godspeed?
Be careful, right? Because if you happen to murder somebody in front of a guard, they're not going to be happy about that. So they're gonna go after you. They might drive you in jail. They might just straight up kill you. So you have to be sure that you kill them in places where other people won't know, or you lure them into a back alley and slaughter them there, that kind of thing. So. There's no morality system, I don't think, but there is a system of like levels of tension in different areas. You'll know kind of like what the consequences will be for your actions depending on how high the tension is at a given time.
All right.
But yeah. You can just straight up be an evil bastard if you want to, and your companions might not be happy about that, but they'll deal with it. You know, that's how it works.
They'll learn.
And there's just like I haven't gone back yet, but there is an enormous amount of replayability in this game. You know, I only experienced a small subset of the classes and skill options that you have available, and I could play a new character and have a completely different experience from that standpoint, and also just a completely different experience in the way that I approach the social interactions too. And like I could take different companions and learn about them. They have their own completely different story. Since we had two companions, we only met two of those like main characters. Those like four others we have no idea about, and we could learn all about what they're up to. It's really awesome. I hadn't played the original Divinity Original Sin. I'd obviously heard a lot about it, and it sounded like it was really cool, especially that co-op aspect. But it sounded like it had some issues in terms of pacing and its story. Actually, it sounded like it was a lot less interesting even than this one. So heard that those kind of things were tuned up in this, and it just looks so good. It's not like a graphic wonder. It's definitely kind of that scaled down isometric view where it's not going to like blow you away, but it looks great. Like it's a fun art style, and it's really appealing. Cool. All right, that'll wrap up, I think, our first go around here. I guess like we don't have like a ton of other games to talk about. We obviously been going for a bit, but I think it'd be good to talk about Night in the Woods because a couple of us mentioned that as being up there for 2017. So let's do that. Anyone can take point on that, I guess.
Night in the Woods. You play as a cat named May who drops out of college and comes home to her busted, I don't know, New Jersey, West Virginia, like a busted-ass mining town that is economically depressed. And it's basically about the shenanigans she gets up to with her friends and also some weird, maybe supernatural shit that is going down in the town. Yeah, it's kind of like Richard Scarry, like animals talking to each other in thought balloons and speech bubbles, but it's one of those cool games where it's like on the surface it's very it's charming, it's sarcastic, it's lighthearted until a point where it's not, and suddenly it gets really serious out of the blue, and when it gets really serious it gets really good. There's a conversation early on in that game where you're in a car or May is in a car with one of her friends, and they start talking about who had opportunity to go to college and who didn't have the opportunity to go to college, and shit gets real. And I think that's like the first time where like the tone pivots very sharply. And it never feels like it sideswipes you. It feels like everything has been built up in a way where it's like, oh, all these clues that have been dropped are about these relationships that have been simmering under the surface. It's like, oh, this is what's really going on in this story. It's really good. It's not that long, so yeah, if anybody is able, go pick up Night in the Woods. It's one of the better written games that came out this year.
Yeah, I love this. I haven't actually played it, but I watched a playthrough of it, and it's so good. And I love, as you say, Katie, I love how it hides all of this really dark, themes behind this cutesy facade. So the small town, the seedy underbelly of a small town, and all these mental illness issues and all these familial tensions. And I guess because it sort of takes the point of view of someone who's sort of inconsiderate of others or all that. So it starts off really sort of light, or you don't really understand what's going, but the more you dig deeper, the more you understand about what's going on. And I like how it almost sort of, because May is someone who's going through mental illness or has gone through mental illness, there's certain points where like the world around you kind of changes, where you can't really, it doesn't visually change, but you can't really get much information out of people, and she's like struggling to connect with people. And there's this sort of frightening dream sequence where she's running through this town, this ghost town, which we find out later was meant to be her college. Like she went through this really dark episode while she was at college, and that's kind of the reason you learn why she left college. So there's the sort of like, early 20s aimlessness and helplessness. And yeah, it's such a great like a young adult kind of novel, like this sort of coming of age and dealing with all these emotional issues and gender issues and sexual issues and things like that. It's so well done.
It's definitely a quarter life crisis game.
Right, yeah, for sure.
I'm a sucker for these kind of coming of age stories. No secrets about that. And this one was really good. Just like you guys say, so many of the different characters that you can interact with here, they just have such deep, serious, and compelling stories about them. And it really touches you. And just thematically, again, that idea of like the quarter life crisis, the idea of coming back home after college and just like not knowing what your life is or where you're going, just really it hit home, and it was strong. It came across really well, and it's just a powerful theme to explore, and it's exciting to see something like that in video games.
What's really cool about it is also that the environments are fairly limited. Like there aren't that many locations to explore, but watching other people's playthroughs, because you like Persona, because you don't have infinite amount of time to go and talk with people, and you have to choose who you're going to hang out with. And there's just so many things where I was like watching other people's playthroughs, I was like, I had no idea you could talk to that character. I had no idea that character existed or that storyline existed, that there's like these interesting branches that just like you would never think would be inside of a game that seems as small as this one does.
Would this game still be as good if they're not?
Oh no! I mean, it's a huge factor that they're all animals. I mean, that's key. That's essential. No, I think it is a huge. Actually, it is a pretty major part of just like that sort of dissonance, right? You know, there's an interesting juxtaposition there that actually is pretty cool. I think just talking about what you mentioned, Duncan, that kind of idea of the ways that the fact that May has these struggles with mental illness and how it kind of affects your experience and your perspective. I love the idea that, obviously this is a game with dialogue options. There are occasionally times in the game where you'll be talking about something serious with someone and wanting to maybe comfort them and maybe, have a certain kind of outcome, and you won't have that option. You know, the options that are available to you are the options that May would say. And it's generally does not lead to what you want, which is an exciting thing in terms of kind of taking agency away from the player and forcing you to actually deal with the same kind of things this character is and these characters are.
Yeah, you get a sense that May is like limited by what she's capable of doing or saying or connecting with people. So you can see that other characters are in pain, but she can't actually comfort them at times. Maybe we would like to, but maybe even May would like to, but she's incapable of seeing it or expressing that kind of concern. And it happens with all like her parents are going through economic hardships, and her friends are having trouble and feeling a bit isolated and lonely. And yeah, it's just this gradual, and it is this not really objective, but you're just kind of hanging out with these people. And a lot of it's really fun. Like, there's some actually really funny dialogue and moving dialogue, and it works really well as just kind of a hangout kind of game. You just go day to day having activities with your friends.
Playing Guitar Hero with your friends. Yeah. Not literal Guitar Hero. Yeah, I did really poorly. yeah, you have band practice with some of your buddies, and it gives you a Guitar Hero-esque loadout of having to press the buttons as they fly at you, and I've always sucked at that, so yeah, everyone commented laboriously that I was not good at bass guitar. It hurt my feelings a little.
It's another one of those cool seamless blends of gameplay and sort of narrative and theme, where obviously the way it works is like we said with Persona, it's every new day is just like you go out and do whatever, and it kind of reinforces that aimlessness where like days start to blend together and you're just like, what am I going to do today? What is the thing I do with like this kind of lack of purpose in my life? And it's just it's cool to see how well realized that is.
It ties really well with the depression that the town's suffering. Like, there aren't opportunities for a lot of these young people, and there is a sense that if you stay in this town, you'll kind of be trapped. So a lot of the some of the characters resent May for getting out and also for coming back. But May actually has a really positive view of the town because she has so many happy childhood memories, which maybe that's why it has such a cutesy sort of coding at the beginning and gets increasingly dark as she realizes how much the town has fallen apart and it's not this nostalgic place that she viewed it as.
I do think the game, again, not to get into spoilers, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this. I do think the game does kind of go off the rails toward the end. It doesn't really stick the landing in terms of a lot of the interesting things it throws up in the air. What do you guys make of that part?
It pivots hard into a direction that I was not prepared for. And like, it gets dark in a way that like extends beyond sort of the mundane financial mental illness things into sort of like Stephen King horror. Yeah, like, I don't know if like I didn't dislike the ending. It just sort of left me cold and feeling unresolved.
Yeah, I was fine with it. And it was more like an outcome of the town's fall rather than this kind of supernatural cause of it. I liked that it was because May is constantly seeing things in the shadows that no one believes. So it was kind of a validation that she, that something was happening and her friends like believe her and back her. So that was sort of emotionally satisfying. And you find out, I won't spoil anything, but I was fine with it. I think kind of need that kind of more heightened climax for a game. I'm not sure how else they would have. Yeah, I don't know. I was fine with it.
Did you guys find the four musicians in the town? No, not. I found two of them. No, like,
yeah, I only saw two.
Yeah, in her dream, she's constantly running into these four musicians, and you can find those guys in the town, but it's like, I scoured that city, and it's like, I only ever found two of them, and it drives me a little crazy that, where else could they possibly be? Where are these musical animals? Yeah, again, there's just like a bizarre like amount of stuff crammed into a very limited space.
Yeah, and that limited space and limited time too, right? Where you can only experience so many things before it ends. All right, anything else you want to say on Night in the Woods?
Looks cool. I'll play it sometime.
It's definitely cool.
It's really good, and it's not too long.
It's not one of these 100-hour epics we've been spending all our time talking about.
No, yeah.
All right, well, that I think will wrap up our roundtable on some of our favorite games of 2017. It was really, really cool to hear some of your guys' favorites and why you like them so much. Really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Can ahead. I say? I'm not gonna open.
I see you highlighting it
for like wider. What? I didn't do anything.
Oh, okay.
I highlighted it. I highlighted Mass Effect Andromeda. Is that what you're gonna say?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm replaying it for the second time. I don't think it's bad. I think it's a mess, but an interesting mess.
I think that's the problem with Andromeda. It's never bad. It was never
No, it's not bad at all. It's I feel like the animation troubles that they came at, like that have been fixed, but I think like the animation problems sort of steamrolled all the criticisms of that game. I think it has a lot of charm. I think the main story is a disaster. I think the villains are not good. But I also think I also feel like the combat's good, the vehicle stuff is good, and I also think like the periphery character stuff is charming and perfectly decent. it's one of those games where it's like I'm more intrigued by it because it's such a weird freak show of ideas that didn't quite come together.
I mean, it's almost like the production of this game is more interesting than the game itself at this point.
Yes.
There's that giant Kotaku article about all the entire mess of how this game was made.
Waypoint had a very interesting podcast about race within the company and how certain voices were shed out of the development and the writing in a way that I think affected the outcome, because Andromeda is this very bizarre, like...
It's a Frankenstein game.
Yeah, but it's also like this Manifest Destiny thing that is just like nobody thought this through.
No.
I'm enjoying it. Like, I enjoyed it the first time, and I'm enjoying it even more the second time, and I'm sure I'll play it again in the future. Like, it's definitely, like, if I'm ranking out BioWare games, it's near the bottom, but it's not like... I don't feel ill towards it.
Sonic Brotherhood.
I mean,
no, it's not like not that. Kidding. No, nothing like that.
Like,
it's
so,
perfectly fine. No, it's a solid 6 or 7.
Yeah, well, I could probably give it a 5. I just never connected with any of those characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just never felt anything for any of those characters, and that's my main problem with the game. Like, the animation stuff, it's almost a red herring because it's.
Yeah.
Every single Mass Effect game has problems with animation. It's just for some reason in this game it just got completely blown out of proportions. But the main problem is the writing, and the writing is a mess.
Yeah, like I said, yeah, it's a mess. But I also feel like the parts are more interesting than the sum. Like, the sum is a disaster, but I think there's a lot of gold to be found.
Yeah, there's so many really good ideas, but I just wish any of those ideas was developed into an actual game instead of what was actually the main plot.
I think it'll be interesting what they take from this game going forward.
I think Mass Effect, I think it's dead, though.
Well, no, I mean, not like the franchise. I don't think that's coming back anytime soon, if at all. But I meant like what lessons they are going to learn from this and, like, proceeding with their other with Anthem and Dragon Age.
Look forward to microtransactions in the next whatever.
I'm really scared for BioWare. I think about BioWare sometime, and I'm like, please don't let them be eaten by the EA dragon. They've already been eaten, but don't let them be shat out and dispensed with.
Like Visceral Games. And Maxis.
It's brutal. I haven't played this bad boy. I haven't touched Mass Effect Andromeda, and it's really
check it out. I mean, it's.
I'm going to.
It's a BioWare game. It's a lesser BioWare game.
But it's just sad, right? It's sad to not be enthusiastic and excited about playing a Mass Effect game, because that's one of my favorite game series ever. Like, it's it always will be, and it's sad to not be excited about the latest installment of that.
What do you guys think about Anthem coming out next year?
No, it's definitely a big one.
I don't
care. If it's gonna be that kind of Destiny style game, like, that's not me. But maybe it'll be more, like, it's possible.
I try to remain optimistic, but as soon as it started drawing comparisons to Destiny, I was like, I think Destiny might be the most boring game I have ever played.
I'm not interest in Destiny, and I'm afraid it's going to get overhyped. Like, it's going to be the what's that game, No Man's Sky. Of whatever year it comes out of.
Yeah. I mean, I want it to be good. I want it to do well because I want the company to do well, and I want the next Dragon Age game to come out.
Yeah.
I really don't care about Anthem, but it's like, as long as they can, you know, shovel that money back into the locomotive, so we can keep going down the tracks.
Very little faith.
I just wanted to give a plug for Resident Evil 7, which was released at the start of the year. It's like the first. I guess the first official first-person shooter game in the Resident Evil series, and it was a nice transition away from action, which is what the previous Resident Evil games had evolved into, and back towards a more horror vibe. So it's kind of like a mix of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Evil Dead. Mm. You find yourself in a cabin in rural Louisiana, being hunted by a guy with a chainsaw and lots of other creepy people. But yeah, it's a nice mix of like tension and gore horror and being trapped and being hunted and all that. I don't know if any of you guys have played it, but
I watched a playthrough of it. It was surprising. I was surprised that like There is a battle in that game in a garage that is pretty amazing. Like, yeah, it's a surprising game, even though, like, I really don't like survival horror. And it's also just, like, that whole game is just disgusting to look at. But yeah, it's definitely,
And
nobody remembers 6, I don't think, or 5.
Because they sucked.
Yeah, this one's good.
Right, yeah. It's not generic zombies being mowed down by a machine gun. It is it's much creepier vibe. And there's that, like, some of the quintessential Resident Evil just crazy scenarios that they get into where you're almost laughing at
really
what's happening.
VR game too, so that's exciting.
If you have VR.
I did I think this was last year, but I did finally play, I think after our last round table, played Resident Evil 4 finally for the first time, which is Great game.
Okay.
Lived really? Up to the hype, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Awesome, yeah.
Still an excellent game. Has anyone played
Nier? I played Nier, yeah.
I don't think I'm good enough to play Nier in terms of skills.
Yeah, so Nier's in my top 5.
Or any platform game.
God, like, this is the game I think about the most in terms of, like, just, like, trying to dissect what the hell is happening, and it definitely left this, like, powerful impression behind after I was done with it. Like, it just was, especially as you get to later stages of this game, like, it was just, it beat me down. It was brutal, like, and not in ways you'd expect. It's not, like, overtly, like, depressing or anything like that, but it was just... It was something. I don't know. It's a hard game to describe.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but glowing reviews about that game. And
yeah, I feel like I need to just, because right now I have too much work and stuff, but I feel like I need to just set aside like a week or a month, like a huge block of time, and just focus on playing Nier, because I feel like it needs me to actually think about a lot of the stuff it's trying to say.
Yeah, it's worth the play. It's like nothing else. So that's always exciting. Has a phenomenal ending too, if you're willing. So it's one of those weird games, right, where you're like, you have to have, it has multiple endings, and you have to play through it multiple times, in a slightly different way, at least once, to get all that stuff. But it's a really interesting and cool ending.
Cool.
Worth a play. One other shout out game, I won't go into too much detail, but another one big game for me this year was Hollow Knight. Just general stuff about this, it was a Metroidvania game in the same style as obviously Metroid Castlevania, and I think Ori and the Blind Forest is a game people think of a lot in terms of that. Another example, as you were talking about with Zelda, of like just a kingdom that has fallen, and just the fun of exploring that, and of like the dark kind of broken world, and finding places and exploring new areas. It was another one of those games where I just had so much fun exploring through it. Really good in the Metroidvania vein in terms of kind of building up your capacity, both in terms of platforming and combat with like the new skills you get, and just getting stronger and doing that. Like, it was really, really good with that, and it's another really strong game. So yeah. All right, one more thing I want to talk to you guys about: games coming out. Obviously, that's what dominates our thinking, is like, what's next? What's the next big game? Well, I listed a few of potential most anticipated games of 2018 here. Obviously, if there's something obviously not on the list, feel free to bring it up. But I think these are some of the big ones, at least, that people are talking about. So I've got Red Dead Redemption 2 here. It's a kind of a big game, I guess. What are you guys thinking about that one?
It looks good. I mean, yeah. It shouldn't exist, but...
yeah. I love the original, but I wasn't sort of yearning for a sequel or anything.
Yeah.
Because there's no room for a sequel, my God.
Like a prequel or something. Isn't that what they're doing?
Yes.
No. That's what they're doing?
I think so. I think it's like John Marston as a young outlaw.
Hmm.
Which is a story we didn't need, but like I said, I'll pick it up because I like riding horses around and... Yeah. They've already got my money.
I'm a little wary of this. I mean, again, there was no room for more story. I don't know if they just made up this story just so they can make more money. What Take-Two did with Grand Theft Auto 5 since it's been out hasn't been very great. If it's their weird microtransaction stuff, so I don't know.
I still haven't played the first one, to be honest with you guys.
Man,
it's one of the many that I really need to play.
Go back and play that instead of you.
The best thing Rockstar has ever made. I would argue maybe the only good thing Rockstar has ever made.
Either, so it's
I agree. It's probably the only good thing.
It's way better than Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, I've heard good things. I should probably play it. anything else you guys want to pull off this list?
I like this Cage BS.
So we got a new David Cage game coming up, Detroit Become Human, where it's like a bunch of AI stuff where the AIs are coming back to.
Are the robots having sex?
Probably having sex, and it seems like there's like different choices you can make that determine things. What do you guys think about this thing?
He's kind of odious, and it just seems like a way to not tell a story about black people in Detroit. I remember like way back in the day liking what was the first game he did called?
Oh yeah.
Indigo Prophecy, even though that thing is jank as hell and not very good. I liked Heavy Rain just fine.
It's okay.
I mean, it's not great, but I mean, at the time, like when it first came out, I thought it was actually really impressive. It probably does not hold up to reevaluation. I did not play the creepy Ellen Page thing that he made.
That's a guilty pleasure of mine, to be honest. The Ellen Page simulator. Watched like 3 different Let's Plays of that for some reason. So I'll probably look at this thing too and see what it's about. But yeah, it's like it's what it is.
Has David Cage ever like talked to someone? Like actually talk to someone? Why is his dialogue seem like he has never talked to someone?
He's just a very strange man. He was also homeless for a time, and so all of his games have like homeless subplots in them. Which, you know, I guess that's like the most interesting thing about like him as an auteur or whatever.
I actually like those parts a lot, I'm gonna be honest. They're enjoyable to me in a weird way.
I don't actually think this is coming out next year.
It might. But that's probably top of the list for me in terms of anticipating.
Anybody saw that trailer? Featuring Laura Bailey as I don't know who.
I'm so hyped for this game. That was one of my favorite games of the past 10 years. But I don't have a PS4, and I don't really want to buy a PS4 just for one game. But I'm going to have to figure out a way to play that, because it looks so cool. Well, I hope it'll be cool.
I look forward to
cutscene so far.
Yeah, I look forward to watching this game.
Does it have Joel and Ellie in it?
Ellie.
Ellie definitely.
Or something based on the first trailer. That's my theory. That's just my theory.
Is he gonna tell her the truth? Is he gonna tell her what he did? Like that would get me on board if like that conflict was exploded.
Like
but
I think I can't remember what we said a million years ago when we did The Last of Us VOK. But like there's obviously that amazing ending. What do you guys think about like going past that with Ellie and Joel?
Now that I said it, though, I mean she does know, so it's not like
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just the lie agreed upon.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
poison
think
in the relationship.
I don't think the sequel is going to deal with that about
so,
that
either.
That much, except for personal struggle with Ellie herself.
Just how fucked up she's going to be.
How much older is she? Like, how many years have passed?
She looks like
20.
Oh, okay.
We don't obviously know, but
yep.
I've not been paying attention because I'm not really that interested. The Last of Us 2. It's like Red Dead Redemption, where it's like the ending was so good, we didn't need to do anything else.
I feel a little bit better about having more Last of Us than more Red Dead.
Sure.
Last of Us feel like it could have more stuff afterwards.
Yeah, and I think I care way more about the characters in Last of Us, so I'm happy to see what happens next with them.
It'll be interesting. I Naughty Dog generally doesn't like mess up too badly, so it's probably gonna be pretty good.
Right.
Got Death Stranding on here. Whatever the hell that is, it's gonna come out at some point.
Kojima BS.
Yeah.
Well. I'm excited for Metro Prime 4, but so far all we've got is a title. A video
I'm
of a
not
title.
Anticipating that
so
anytime soon.
That could
soon.
Be a few years off.
It's gonna be a
while. No, that could be a while off.
That'll be interesting.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Death Stranding, is that the one with
Norman Reedus?
Yes. Make a Norman Reedus, Guillermo del Toro holding a baby thingy majigger. And of course, Mads Mikkelsen.
Whatever help the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
Is this game? Like, this is going to be something.
Nobody knows.
It's Kojima.
Kojima BS. It's Hideo Kojima BS.
Nanomachines. Outer Heaven. War has changed.
The rumor mill, I guess, is that Jeff Keighley's game show is gonna have some stuff about this, probably, because he's best friends with Kojima, but we'll see.
More BS. It's going to have more BS.
You got Valkyria Chronicles 4 up here. That's you, right, Bing?
Oh, yeah.
What's this about?
Yeah, definitely added that. Okay, so yes, there's going to be a new Valkyria Chronicles that's actually going to be released. That's that's going to be released worldwide.
Okay.
So, years ago in which we did the original roundtable, I hyped up Valkyria Chronicles, the original. Now, 2 and 3, unfortunately, has never been released worldwide. I mean, 2 has, but it's on PSP. No, it's on, Vita or PSP? And which basically destroyed the game. They have released another thing called Valkyria Revolution, but that's an abortion of a game. Don't ever play that. Valkyria Chronicles 4 looks like they're going to return to the original conceit. The original conceit of the original. It's going to be going back to the original war between the Empire and the Federation and our cute little mini Switzerland / Belgium / Paris neutral European country with windmills.
That's all I needed to hear. I guess we'll see how it actually turns out. But right, like I liked Valkyria Chronicles a lot, but the vibe that you've kind of explained and that generally has been is that it just hasn't been, there hasn't been a game that's lived up to that yet. So hopefully this one.
People say 3 is really good. Problem is, 3 has never been released worldwide. You have to rely on weird fan subs and fan translations to you if you ever want to play 3.
I'll keep an eye on this one for sure.
So yeah.
So for me, I gotta say it. Game I've been waiting for literally more than half of my life. Kingdom Hearts 3 is supposed to be coming out.
Oh my god!
I forgot that was
coming out next year. I don't actually believe it yet. Like my hope has been burned to cinders. I'm just a cold, cynical shell at this point. But that
is not 2.8 or 2.9.
Finally, another mainline Kingdom Hearts game, and that's one of my favorite series ever. Yeah. So I hope it's real, and I hope it's actually good.
Yeah, I am a closeted Kingdom Hearts fan as well, and it's just it's such a bonkers series, and it's I cannot believe the 2 is a PS2 game. It was so long ago, and there's been how many interim weird little mini sequels have there been?
10
in between, 6, 10.
It suffers from the same problem as Valkyria Chronicles, I think, right? Where it's all these kind of offshoot, mobile game, handheld games and things like that. They just haven't actually released a real game in a long time. So there's a lot of hope and a lot of fear with that one. But it's definitely my most anticipated game of hopefully 2018.
They did put out, or at least they did on consoles, it was all, they put, all of those games together, mm-hmm. On a composite package, which... Mm-hmm. was exciting for me because I never I just don't like playing handheld stuff, so it's okay, I can finally see this shit on my television screen where it belongs.
There's some good stuff in there, especially if you're willing to dive into the crazy, ridiculous, complex plot of Kingdom Hearts as a whole.
Complex.
Convoluted,
complex,
shitty, confusing, whatever you want to
use. Donald Duck versus
Mickey Mouse, who is awful in Kingdom Hearts. He's a tyrant. He's just makes bad decisions. It's just so bizarre.
I love it. Much. I can't even lie about it. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah, I mean, I have a very it's so sentimental to me because I remember playing that first game in middle school or high school and it just being really touched by it. So
cool. Any other games you guys want to shout out? Looking forward to?
There's gonna be a 6-6 DLC that looks cool.
It's the same thing, right? With all the Civ games, we're hoping this actually turns out to be a complete, really good game at some point.
I think this one is the new DLC won't make it actually complete game now.
I don't know. It's such a... I don't understand why I don't like it as much as Civ 5, complete version. But it's definitely not quite there yet for me.
Yeah. It's very different.
I couldn't explain to you, in an articulate way why. but I'm hoping these DLCs to come will make it better. All right, cool. Anything else?
I'm looking forward to playing Mario Odyssey. It was released this year, but I haven't bought it yet. Yeah, but that looks amazing. I'll get it around Christmas.
I don't have a Switch, and probably won't for a while, but it looks amazing. I'm not a huge Mario fan. Obviously, I've played a ton of Mario. Who hasn't? But not a huge Mario fan in many years. But this one looks really, really fun. And it's, again, this is my thing with Nintendo games. I've watched 30 hours of speedruns for this game already. And it's
cool, so. Yeah. Well, Galaxy 2 is my favorite of I guess it's not last gen, it was the gen before, but I'm very much looking forward to this.
Looks really cool. Just a little shout out game coming out in a couple weeks, actually. The sequel to the Moon is coming out finally after 6 years, which is another one of those small little games that I have an abiding appreciation for. So that'll be interesting to see how that one turns out. Looking forward to playing it. Cool. I think that'll do it, guys. I think that is a good way to wrap things up. It was a ton of fun to get together, talk some video games, present and future, with you guys. Really, really good time, and I appreciate you all taking the time to come out, and appreciate anyone who has tuned in to listen to this. Thank you all very much. If you want to check out anything else, Vassals of Kingsgrave, you can do so at vokpodcast.com. You can check us out on the forums at podcastdeviceandfire.com/forum. You can check out our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram. You can also check us out on YouTube if you so choose. But otherwise, that's gonna wrap it up for this VOK here. So again, thank you guys very much, and we'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Thanks a lot.
See ya.
This was an interesting experiment in terms of, like, obviously we don't all have like context for all these games, and probably a little rough around the edges, but it was fun.
Yeah, no, it was great. Thanks,
honestly. I'm actually really glad to get the chance to talk about Breath of the Wild, because I was just like, so many thoughts about that game just needed to excise. So that was fun.
Oh yeah, no, that's why I jumped on it, because otherwise I wouldn't have talked about it, because I wasn't going to make like a podcast just for that, but yeah. To talk about with someone, because I just spent so much time on it.
You gotta do the Tarrytown, man. It was really cool.
Yeah, no, I'll go back to it.
It's so interesting, like, hearing like different experiences about it, because like you talked about kind of this idea of like this like wilderness and like trying to survive that. Like, I had a house in that game. Like, I had a house and all that.
Yeah, I there's so many things I just stumbled across, and I'm like, oh, I'll go back to that. So there's like a snowball bowling game that I went through, and I'm like, I'll go back to that, and I can't remember where it was. Like, I can't find
prime,
it again.
That's the prime Rupee Farm location. If you there's a way to optimize right. bowling such that you get a strike every time. Just to get...
Yeah, I mean, like, I used to be such a completist. Like, I would have done all the shrines and spent 100 hours just clocking everything. The Korok seeds might be bit too much for me, but But yeah, I just don't have, like, I'd rather just move on to another game or do something else.
My strategy these days is like, play a game until I don't enjoy it anymore. then I finish it. And usually that means playing a lot of it, but I don't like force completion for completion's sake. Like, that's not my goal anymore.
Yeah. I just try to get to the end, but just like try and do what I can along the way. But yeah, going back and doing everything maybe. Yeah,
can you ride a horse in the game?
Yeah, you can. You can you take wild horses and try and tame them, and you can keep them at stables. But you can't actually call them whenever you want. You can only sort of call them within certain areas. So you might catch a horse in like one region, one of the 20 regions, keep it at a stable, and you might be able to call it in that region. But if you're on the other side of the map, he can't hear you. But you can just kind of just makeshift a horse. You just, if you need to get somewhere, just find a wild horse, jump on him, ride him, and then discard him.
I actually never, with the exception of like needing to for a quest, I never use the horse. I think part of it is probably that idea that you said, like that the idea that like you, it's not always available, so it's kind of like a pain in the ass as opposed to like the regular traversal options. But I just found like running around using the paraglider, like that was my speed for the game. Like I was good at that.
Yeah, I didn't use the horse as much either, and you don't really need. It's not really practical because there's so much climbing and there's so much like so many inclines that the horses can't make. You just find yourself jumping on and off them and. It's like it's easier to run.
Climbing
run up
is
a mountain
so much about
glide
the game.
Somewhere.
Climbing and jumping off things is like that's Breath of the Wild, I think.
Yeah, passing out your stamina and yeah.
There's an actual stamina meter.
It's really important.
Yeah.
Like, if you get halfway up a mountain and you don't have any more stamina, you're screwed. Like you need to find another way.
Or it starts raining. Yeah. Like you're almost at the top. It starts raining and you slip and fall all the way down.
Or you get struck by lightning if you have metal.
So wait, is the stamina meter for running?
Like sprinting and climbing.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I was like, if it's just for walking, I'd be like, what the hell? That's excessive.
You have to stop and rest for 10 minutes. You get tired, you know.
Whenever I'm done with The Witcher 3, I'll probably start playing this game and maybe get a Switch. But I'm nowhere near done.
That's what I'm
Witcher 3.
Finally playing now. I finally got into Witcher 3.
Yeah. I was talking to Alex, and he finished it like in a week.
He's going
back.
Oh, yeah. He 100%ed
it,
didn't he?
Yet, but
that's insane. Yeah. He's on the DLC right now.
Yeah.
It's good. I can't lie about it.
Yeah, that game took me like a year. I don't understand how, like, because I was talking about him like with him about it, and then he's like, yeah, I've just started it, and then like yesterday he's like, okay, I'm done. Like I don't understand.
Shit, still in Novigrad.
Yeah, it took me so long to like really take the plunge, but now I'm up in that Skellige. Doing fun stuff.
I'm not even in Skellige.
Skellige was the part of the game where I was like, I just need to get
no,
to the end.
No, I agree.
Of the story.
I'm getting like, to that point. They were like, I'm kind of losing interest here. Like, I just want to progress.
Definitely do the DLC. Definitely. They're both really good. Blood and Wine is excellent.
Still only level 19. Still fucking around with Dandelion.
I read the books. Well, I'm starting. Shit. Like, I'm. Yeah, I know. Like. Getting into that level of video game books, but books came first, so I don't feel that guilty about it. Yeah. They're actually like surprisingly decent.
Well, they're making the what is it, Netflix or
Netflix thing,
TV series on the Witchers, on the books. Is it the books or the, I think the books, right?
There's definitely like that 90s era sort of thing where like the very first chapter or the very first book is Geralt, he gets laid by a succubus and then he goes and he kills like three guys in a tavern for no reason. Right. He's like he's the coolest, sexiest guy who's ever lived, but then like the stories actually get really interesting. So if you can look past like the machismo, like the silly 90s machismo, because I think these were written like in 92, 93, maybe even late 80s, like they're actually worth picking up just as like fantasy literature on their own.
I've watched a Polish TV show.
Yeah, The Hexer, is that what it was called?
The Hexer, yeah. Awesome CG effects.
I bet.
Awesome CG effects.
That was always the thing I just couldn't get over in The Witcher. Like I've played all three games to a certain extent, and I just couldn't get into Geralt at all. I finally
Geralt's really good in three though.
No, yeah, Geralt is really good.
Yeah. Better. He's warmed up on me in this one.
Yeah, they softened him and he kind of became a grumpy dad, which
yeah, the way I've been playing it is just like he just fucks up constantly and just like he's pissing off everyone around him and he's just like trying desperately to do his quest. It's just. That's my Geralt.
I've definitely played him as like dude who loves secretly loves monsters and doesn't want to kill them and lets himself be ripped off by peasants just 'cause he's soft hearted.
I completely bargained to the death with the peasants, but I love monsters. I've let every succubus I meant to go.
Yeah, I didn't kill a single troll in that game because they're cute.
Oh no, trolls are awesome. Don't kill trolls.
I just came across, not to spoil, but I just came across that like misfit band of monsters on Skellige that you have to like decide what to do.
I heard about that.
That was fun.
Couldn't save the werewolf though.
He went after me. It's funny, like I haven't touched the Gwent at all in the game itself, but
God.
But now I'm playing the actual Gwent game. That's another time sink.
I cannot abide video game card games.
What?
No, I like If I wanted to play frickin' cards, I wouldn't be playing a video game. I'd turn the console off and I'd go play, I don't know, with my grandpa at his nursing home. I don't know. It just, it's really counterintuitive to me that, like, you would play a card game inside of a video game. It just, I cannot do it. Ever since Final Fantasy VIII, it's just like, this irks me.
I just can't. The idea of playing, like, those mini games with NPCs, just, like, I don't get that at all. Like, I just don't see the appeal.
And the cards have the NPCs themselves on the cards.
But I'll definitely play, like, the real Gwent and, like, get my ass kicked by people that have all the cards do that.
I try to play more video games in 2018. It's
always the resolution. Yeah. I feel like for me, like, I don't want to ever force it. Like, if I just don't feel like playing the games, like, I'm not going to. But
yeah.
I've been actually really, really high on the video games lately, so I'm just enjoying it.
I've definitely reached the point where I'm going back to The Sims. Uh-oh. So I know that I'm at a low point, a dry period. Yeah, they came out with a new pet expansion. I must have it.
Of course.
I am playing Crusader Kings again now. That is bad. There's China. There's China now in Crusader Kings. We finally reached the point where there's China now.
Still too afraid to touch all that 4X, whatnot.
Chinese people are ruling Ireland, I'm telling you.
Finally.
All right, cool, guys. That'll probably do it for us. Right, again, thank you guys for taking the time to do this. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. We'll actually try to do more video game VOKs in the future as much as possible.
So. We still got that part two.
Oh, yeah,
favorite game.
Yeah,
if you want, if you want, Doug, and I'd be willing to take the reins on that, I guess.
If you want it, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can do it. I just don't know when. I wanted to do it, like, pretty soon afterwards, but I just lost track of it.
That was really fun. I've listed that a few times, like over and over. It's
good to hear
podcast.
What people really, really love.
And most people seem to have, or a couple of people seem to have played most games. So it works like sort of, even though it was like, people didn't
know
the
all
peaks,
the games. All the games.
That's something like, I think I realized too. This is actually a podcast, podcast that might be better served with like a lot of people, or at least like more, just to have like that breadth of experience.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about more popular games after my first two choices.
I was
going to
go super, super obscure. No. That was where I was going.
I liked how, like, yeah, it was a mix of like popular stuff that people could talk about and stuff that we didn't know about. So we were sort of discovering it, or the listener was discovering it.
For sure.
Undertale?
Is that where you want to go? Was that my game of the year? Was that last year or 2015?
I think that was in my top
somewhere, for sure.
Is it true if you, like, if you do evil things in that game, you can never erase it? Like, it lives within the memory of the game.
Really scary,
you have to go and fix the game files if you want to. Yeah.
Right. Purge it. That sounds terrifying.
Don't do genocide. It's actually really, it's really, really hard to do.
You need to
genocide.
Know what to do. You have to have that prescribed you.
You can't luck into that.
I see. You have to want to be bad.
Yeah, didn't need to be bad. Awesome, guys.
Awesome.
Thank
Thanks
you.
A lot.
Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too.
Yep.
Bye.
Good night.